Life Enthusiast Co-op Podcast, restoring vitality to you and to the planet. Let's join our hosts, Scott Patton and Martin Batella, now.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Life Enthusiast Co-op Podcast. I'm your co-host, Scott Patton, along with Martin Batella. Hey, Martin, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I'm feeling peaceful and contented. Imagine that.
Great. And I want to give you the opportunity to start off by telling everybody our byline instead of me doing it this time.
Restoring vitality to you and to the planet?
That's the one. And well, I have to say that you've done a very good job of restoring my vitality, although today, the last week or so, I've been cleansing, I guess. I've been fighting a bit of a cold. And I want to say that it was very interesting because I know the second that I got the cold and I was sitting on a train platform in England, it was a sunny day. It was a bit, you know, cool fall sunny day, and I was in the shade. And I just had this little shudder go down my spine. I went, oh, darn. I just knew it meant that I was going to be fighting this cold. But yeah. And I'm surprised because I haven't been dragging or, you know, I cough a little bit. You know, my nose is runny and I have the cold symptoms. But I haven't been, you know, bedridden or any of those things. And it's been kind of interesting.
Yeah, so I guess that's a bit of a testimony to the resilience of your immune system, that you're not really all that unwell anymore.
No, that's
on
right.
On the other hand, you know, I would speculate that the reason you got it is because of flying overseas is a, you know, it's really hard on you. I mean, shifting across and changing time zones and all of that, that's not fun.
Well, and I really think that you're right. I think that when we're under a lot of mental and emotional stress or physical stress or, you know, being in an airplane for 12 hours with, you know, 50 other people is, you know, I know that I put myself in environments that were not really healthy. I haven't been exercising as much as I would like because I've been traveling so much and those different things. So there's lots of kind of factors. And it's interesting talking about them from the point of view of, you know, these are the things I did, and that's why I got this result, as opposed to, oh, man, you know, I just got this cold. Poor me. I made those choices that put me into that lifestyle for that period of time, and it's one of the consequences of that. And my body's just saying, man, you're doing too much. You're running around too much. Like, slow down. And
It's good that you become self-empowered, self-aware, and essentially you own your own outcomes, right?
Yep. The other thing that I've really noticed for the last, excluding the last maybe 6 months, probably less than 6 months, but for the previous 40-odd years of my life, when it came to 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night, I would have this almost compulsion to go and, at first it was make a corned beef sandwich with my dad, and then when I left home it was have a bowl of cereal or, you know, a grapefruit or usually it was cereal, although oftentimes it was sandwiches, late in the day, just before bed sort of thing. And it was one of those things where I imagine this is what addicts go through. Like I'm going to all the cupboards and I'm opening and I'm looking and I'm just like frantic trying to find something to stick in my mouth. And
yeah, what is going to satisfy me? Yeah, that's a classic, actually, of the symptoms of malnutrition.
Yeah.
If you can believe it.
Yeah.
Living in the richest society, suffering from malnutrition. How is that possible?
I don't know. And I've noticed, though, the last few months that it's 8 o'clock, it's 9 o'clock, it's 10 o'clock. It's like, I feel satisfied. I feel my body feels content. My stomach is not sending off these messages to my brain that are like, get me food. And it's really nice. I'm quite enjoying it, actually.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I guess that's a great intro to what I'm trying to talk about today, being malnutrition. That's
So how can we have, you know, I mean, look at our grocery shelves. They're full of food, and we're getting obese, and yet you're talking about malnutrition. That just doesn't quite make sense.
Well, let me share the statistics from the U.S. Department of Agriculture and about what people eat. You know, what is the most common eating? Number one, whole cow's milk. Number two, 2% milk. I don't know why they needed to do two separate categories on that.
Right.
Number three, processed American cheese.
Oh,
number
that's
four,
good for you.
Yeah. Number four, white bread. Number 5 white flour and number 6 white rolls. Again, I don't know why they needed to separate all three, but there they are. Number 7, refined sugar. Number 8, colas. Did you know that colas were a food group, according to the USDA?
Holy smokes. So number 8 is like Coca-Cola and Pepsi-Cola. And
yeah, soda pops.
Wow.
And number 9, ground beef.
Holy.
Okay, so what you just heard is stuff that is practically devoid of nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
We have lots and lots of calories, very high glycemic index, and essentially, you know, starch, which is just a complicated sugar,
yep.
And sugar, and cola, which is sugar with water,
and then the cow's
milk, which of course, well, we can discuss the beauty of that, you know, the power of advertising, you know, the illusion of energy, you know, calcium grows strong bones.
Yeah, yeah, and of course we know you need magnesium in there too, right?
Yeah, well, without magnesium, nothing happens. You know, you can have a load of bricks, and without the magnesium, it's not going to stay.
That's right. You know, when you spoke about the processed cheese, that reminded me of a story I heard about how processed cheese came to be, and it was in World War One or Two. I'm not sure which one. And this cheesemaker, they needed to get food that they could put out into the battlefield where there was no refrigeration, that wouldn't go bad for the soldiers to eat.
That's
and
right.
And so this cheesemaker went in to see a general, and he said, "I have this cheese, and it'll be fine for the soldiers." And of course, no cheese would not go bad in a couple days, right? And,
right.
And so the general didn't believe him. So when the fellow left, he took the cheese and he put it on the radiator. And he left. And 2 or 3 days later, the general noticed the cheese sitting on the radiator. And he looked at it and he took a little bit and he ate it. And he left it a couple more days and he looked at it and he took a little bit and he ate it. And there was no change in the texture. There was no change in the taste and, you know, and everything else. So basically, it was cheese that couldn't go bad. And that's how processed cheese came to be. And
that's
you have
good.
To wonder, like, you know.
Well, here's the point. If it cannot go bad, how could it actually yield any nutrition to you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's
how
the big
do we
question.
Extract any nutrients out of
yeah.
something that's basically.
But anyway, so just, sure. yeah, I'd like to return to the point I was trying to make, which is, so there's all those calories and not enough nutrition. So if you're eating the standard American diet, which is rich in calories but very poor in nutrition, you will have these phenomenal cravings that they will just never let up. Your body essentially says, "I need nutrients." But since you have been undereducated, you think that means eat something. So you go into the cupboard and find yourself a bag of chips or a bowl of cereal or a sandwich with something and eat it. Thinking that that's nutrition.
Right.
But that's just more calories. That's how you get fat. More calories in than calories out. One day at a time. You know, a little bit here, a little bit there. Pretty soon it adds up to a pound.
Yeah. And the calories don't...
Anyway, so what I'm trying to say to people is take about 2/3 of what you eat. In raw fruits, raw vegetables, 2/3 by volume, which means, you know, eat tomatoes and cucumbers and lettuce and apples and oranges, but stay the heck out of white flour and white bread, you know. I mean, look at white flour. If it doesn't spoil, that means that all the good stuff has been taken out of it.
I think that's a really good way of looking at it, right? It's the food is supposed to break down, and if we make it so it doesn't break down, then we're not going to be getting out of it what we need to get out of it.
That's exactly that. You know, when I went traveling to Florida, I took a bottle of the Exelus Superfood with me, and on the fourth day of nice and humid, even air-conditioned but still nice and humid weather, the bottle was starting to kind of have a nice whiff to it. So that was telling me, okay, this stuff does really have enzymes in it, and it really is digesting itself pretty quickly. That's why we tell people to keep it in freezers.
Right, right. So.
But anyway, so.
Mm-hmm. No, go ahead.
Well, I wanted to, you know, mention this following, that in the, you know, in nutritional instructions, people hear take so much of carbohydrates, take protein, you know, take fiber, all of these different categories.
Mm-hmm.
But what they don't tell you is that the quality that you're supposed to take, you know. I mean, there is a big difference between carbohydrate from popcorn and carbohydrate from fresh beans, for instance,
right.
Well, I can't even think of all the stuff that doesn't get mentioned. You know, they mention these big groups like carbohydrates, proteins, and fat, and fiber. None of those actually contain any of the important stuff. You know, the phytonutrients.
Right.
I mean, if carbohydrates was that, you could use sugar. If fat was it, you could use lard. And protein, well, you could use just a piece of bacon, I suppose.
Right.
And that's that.
Be done with it.
Be done with it. You wouldn't last very long on a diet like that. Well, oh, mind you, no, some people can live on it for a long time.
Well, our bodies are amazing, right?
Yeah, it's just fantastic how it's able to withstand the malnutrition that we give it. And so that's why we're making these superfoods. You know, these superfoods are able to make up for the difference between what you're eating and what you should be eating, because these are the most nutrient-dense foods that we can find.
The other thing when it comes to nutrition that I've heard a lot of, Martin, is combining foods a certain way. And maybe for those people that are listening that have heard a little bit about it but aren't really aware of the concept, you might be able to just expand on that a little bit.
Sure. Well, there were two issues with combining. Early on, when people started promoting vegetarian lifestyles, the big issue was, well, is this a complete protein? You know, and you needed to say, well, you need to eat rice and beans together to make up a complete protein, because there are certain amino acids in one and not in the other. And nutritionists were trying to design meals so that you would always have a complete protein, you know, with all the essential amino acids in the same meal.
Right.
Well, later it became obvious that it doesn't have to be on the same day, you know. So you don't have to really plan your meals in such a careful way.
Well, and when you think about it, when we were kind of running around the savannah avoiding saber-toothed tigers, we didn't really stop and say, okay, I've had a couple blueberries. I better, you know, make sure I have a carrot with that, right?
Yeah,
you know,
exactly. You ate whatever showed up.
That's right.
Yeah, you ate what showed up that day. And then the second issue of food combining is the more modern concept of alkalizing as you eat.
Mm.
Because in your stomach, to digest proteins, you need to create a much more acidic environment than to digest carbohydrates.
Oh,
so there's this sort of competition going on in your stomach, because to digest spaghetti, you need to go somewhat alkaline, and to digest the meatballs, you need to go quite acidic. And maybe you remember this experiment from your high school, where you take some baking soda and pour some vinegar on it. Do you recall that one?
No, but I can imagine that it was quite a violent reaction.
Well, it's you get heat and you get bubbles, you get fizz.
Right, right.
The output is extra heat and extra carbon dioxide, which is exactly what you get in your stomach, and you call it heartburn.
Oh, I see.
So people who actually are suffering from the GERD, you know, the gastroesophageal reflux, something, I don't know.
Oh, acid
those
reflux?
Words. Yeah, acid reflux. People who suffer from that could help themselves a lot by practicing food combining, which would mean only one concentrated food on a plate.
Mm.
Essentially salad with a potato, salad with a steak, salad with spaghetti, salad with rice, salad with a piece of fish.
Mm.
Essentially fresh veggies most of the time, with a little bit of concentrated either protein or carbohydrate, but not both.
Mm. Interesting.
So that's That's the famous food combining. And that, by the way, is the surest way to lose a lot of fat. It's the quickest way to drop waistline, especially for people who have, you know, a whole bunch of fat coming up all around the middle.
All right.
So how far back do we go?
Just the last sentence. We were talking about food combining, and
so the food combining lifestyle is very much unlike the standard American diet, where the hamburger is the wrong thing and the sandwich is the wrong thing. It just, you know, all of those favorite meals that are so easy to fix that we are all are used to, they're just badly combined.
Right.
And but, you know, I went on.
I was going to say, the trick is to add, looks to me, is to have salad and something.
Yes. Full food combining. It, all of a sudden, you make a commitment, you decide you're going to do it, it's possible. You know, the meals that I ate away from home, I used to pack lunches, you know, I'd have a bowl of rice and a big salad. And that's that.
Right.
Worked like a charm. I dropped from size 36 waist to size 30 waist in no time.
There you go. So there's the secret to losing weight.
Or to losing chunkiness, losing volume. Yeah.
Right. Yeah,
the weight that you don't need, you know. I just simply became slim, right?
Right. Nice. I have a question, too, about one of the things that the Life Enthusiast Co-op website talks about is the daily cycles of our body as far as food goes. And
That goes together with this food combining concept.
And I thought it was just interesting the way that you had it laid out, and I was hoping that you could share a little bit of that with our listeners.
Sure. You bet. It's what happens is your body's cells, not the digestive system, but at the cellular level, you have three cycles. Elimination.
Yeah. Elimination.
Something went blip.
Oh.
Sorry, Scott.
That's okay. Just a second. I thought that we...
Okay, your body has three: digestion, appropriation, and elimination. So, and you get about 8 hours of each throughout every day. And that's at the cellular level, not in the digestive system. So during the appropriation, you're essentially taking stuff on. And
so
that is...
Eating, you mean?
Yeah, eating. That's essentially bringing stuff in between about noon and 8 in the evening. That would be the appropriation cycle. Then digestion, from about 8 in the evening to about... Gee, I don't know if I'm saying it right.
4, you are.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I just should remember these things. Sorry about that.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot. There's lots to the, of information. You're doing pretty good.
Could we erase this? So you have these cycles. First, you have appropriation. You eat from about noontime for about 8 hours, so until about 8 p.m. From 8 p.m. to about 4 a.m., you have the digestion, where the body is actually working on taking the stuff that you ingested, taking it apart so that the cells can actually bring it in. Mm. And then finally, between 4 in the morning and noontime, you have elimination. And that's a cellular elimination.
So we're not necessarily saying that if you went to the bathroom at 2 in the afternoon, you were doing it at the wrong time, right?
No, that's not that. No, it's just that at the cellular level, you're trying to get rid of stuff.
Right.
And what's interesting is the moment you start eating, appropriation, you essentially shut down the eliminative cycle. So if you start eating a very rich breakfast at about 9 in the morning, you cut your cellular elimination cycle by about 3 hours.
Right. So, but oftentimes when we wake up in the morning, we're hungry, right? So you're saying
right.
We should have like light fruit or...
We should eat fruits, yeah.
Fruit.
Yeah, we should eat fruits because... Fruit is the stuff that does not digest in the stomach. It actually passes through the stomach and digests in the duodenum. So it does not affect the cycle.
So what I'm hearing is, you know, a bacon and eggs or a Denver omelet and hash browns and sausage and porridge is probably not the best thing to have first thing in the morning.
Well, it's a great lunch.
There you go.
With a big salad. I can't imagine that, you know, the bacon and eggs. You know, that stuff is great for people who work physically extremely hard. That sort of stuff was developed when farmers were threshing or when they went into the bush to cut trees with hand saws and axes. You know, guys who put out 5,000 and 6,000 calories in a day. That's the sort of people that need to eat these kind of breakfasts. But ordinary folks don't have such calorie requests, you know. The body just doesn't need it. We're used to it,
right?
Because we like to eat it. We're used to it that way, but it sure is not required. You know, we need the high nutrient content food. Nutrient to calorie ratio, they call it, NCR. And, you know, that the nutrients in an egg, well, there's a good deal of proteins in there, but the rest is totally missing. And you really need to fight on nutrients from plants. That's what's really going to keep you going a long time.
Right.
So what do? We were telling these poor listeners, give up the American diet. Give up the European culture. Start eating like a Chinese person. Eat a stir fry. It's a good thing. Eat a salad.
Eat a salad, yeah. I had a friend of mine yesterday took me out to a Vietnamese restaurant where we had a bowl. It was basically a bowl of soup with some noodles and bean sprouts and basil, I think it was, that we had to shred with our fingers, and some other vegetables in it. And it was just delicious and filling.
Great.
Yeah. So, I mean, when I think about how easy that was to prepare, and you know, bean sprouts, I mean, it's living food that we're just putting in the soup.
Yeah.
It's not hard. It's just a matter of kind of rethinking how we do things, really.
Yeah. Well, you know, we are living too richly. You know, the farmers did not kill an animal every day to have fresh meat, you know. It was maybe on the weekend they would kill a chicken, or once a year they would, you know, butcher a pig, and then they would have the meat for a bit, but they would not eat meat every day. It just wasn't the story.
Right.
It's just this rich Western society that allows us to do that. But, you know, eating that way really drives up the risk of cancer. You know, colon cancer for sure, and lymphatic cancer, because it increases the, you know, the metabolites of nitrogen-rich foods, which is mostly meats and eggs, end up in your lymphatic system. It clogs it. Your body's unable to eliminate it. You end up with lymphoma, or you end up with, you know, the other cancers like the breast and uterus, or prostate cancers. All of that stuff is essentially related to lifestyle. It's the nutritional mayhem that we're causing in our bodies that's giving us these chronic diseases, you know.
Right. So what you're saying is that we're the masters of our own fate. We just need to learn how to drive the ship a little better.
Yeah. Yeah. I really feel quite upset with the industrial interests. They have done such a good job, you know, the grain lobby and the dairy lobby and the meat producer lobby. This goes back into the 1920s and 30s when they created the four food groups and the square meal, you know, where you were supposed to have
three
a carbohydrate
meals.
And meat. Yeah, but the square meal, you know, had four corners on it, and it was the dairy, the grain, the meat, and the vegetables only got one corner. But it shouldn't have been like that, you know. It should have been, eat your vegetables and have a teeny bit of something concentrated here and there, now and then. Unless you're a Olympic athlete who's training so hard that you're putting out 6,000 to 10,000 calories a day. I mean, who works this hard in this society anymore?
No, that's right. Not very many people.
Yeah, I mean, you don't walk to work, and you don't ride on your horse to work, you know. I mean, riding a horse 10 miles, it's quite a workout, right?
That's right.
Yeah, now you just get on your tush, sit behind the steering wheel and drive yourself to the office. And then instead of picking up the scythe or something like that and just swinging hard for 6 or 8 hours, you just flick your wrist with your mouse.
Oh, you've been watching me work.
That's my style too, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, the point of that is that we don't need the galleries, and yet we ingest them. We need to turn it upside down. You need to first eat nutrient-dense foods. Get the superfoods. That's why you're feeling better now that you have been taking these superfoods, because they're making up the difference.
Absolutely.
With the nutrients that you've been missing.
Yeah. And throughout the day when I'm working, I don't feel like I have to get up every 10 minutes and have a donut or a muffin or
yeah.
a cup of coffee
because,
or something like that.
Yeah, because your body is not calling for more nutrients,
yeah.
which, you know, you would have trained it to believe that it's just simply more food.
Yeah.
But it's not that. It's nutrients the body wants.
That's an important distinction to make, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, because if you grab a bag of chips because they're flavorful, they just give you a pile of calories and very little nutrition.
Yeah.
If instead you would have grabbed at least an apple or a carrot stick, you'd be better off. But they better be organic, because if you have carrots that have been grown in some exhausted and tired soils with the help of diazinon to get rid of the pests and NPK fertilizer to push it fast. Again, you have a carrot that looks like a carrot, but the nutrient density in it is a quarter what it should have been.
Mm. Good point.
It's frustrating for me to watch it, because I get these phone calls from people saying, "What should I do? I eat so well. I eat, you know." And then we start analyzing it. Well, what exactly are you eating, and how are you eating it? And it comes down to the fact that even though it looks okay, it doesn't have the minerals and doesn't have the phytonutrients that it's supposed to have. So there's your malnutrition. And the only way out of that is with supplementation. You cannot get it in a grocery store anymore. It's just not there.
Yeah. And people who try this see a massive difference very, very short, you know, in a very
yeah.
short period of time, because really, like you said, we've been we've had malnutrition running rampant through our society for so long that once you start getting a little nutrition in that body, it makes a huge difference.
That's right. Yeah, I really get frustrated with the medical profession, because a lot of them still insist that you can get all the vitamins you need from eating well. I mean, that's such a common fallacy. But it's impossible to be eating well if you're shopping at your grocery store. It's just not there.
Yep.
Now they're starting to put organic food section in there. That stands a chance of giving you decent nutrients.
Cool. All right. So where should someone go if they want to find out more information about getting some nutrient-dense food, Martin?
Oh, it's the Life Enthusiast Co-op, restoring vitality to you. You know, superfoods. Superfoods is definitely great, and it's on our website under products. And minerals, you know, mineral supplements. 60% or more of the population is deficient in magnesium. So, you know, get our magnesium supplements. That's it, you know. It's
that's
so basic. I mean, I'm starting to repeat myself. It's not complicated.
Right. And everyone tries to make it very complicated, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
So they can head over to www.life-enthusiast.com, click on the products and look for superfoods and magnesium. And that would
yep, those are the two first things that they need to start from.
Yep.
And then get good water, and then good, well, whatever. There's more.
Get some
once you start reading. Yeah, once you start reading, you won't be able to stop. And then you'll have to get up and get some exercise. Yes, sir.
That's right. Well, and that's something, you know, we tend to, we try to model as best we can, and we actually postponed the recording of this podcast half an hour because It had been raining here all day, and the sun came out when we were supposed to start, and I asked you, Martin, if it was okay to wait half an hour so I could go for my walk in the sun, and you very graciously agreed, and I just had a wonderful walk along the river that's right beside my place. And
awesome.
And it was just nice to get out into the trees, and there was one little dog, his master was, you know, giving him a walk, and he just went nuts, and he was jumping up and down and racing towards me. So I had to go over and pet him for a few minutes, and the friendliest dog I've ever seen, and he was just so excited. His tail was going, his had a big smile on his face, and his ears were wagging, and it was very nice.
Funny how that goes.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah, exercise is great. You know, that's what's required. And also, the other great thing is, of course, sunlight. We all so need to actually be out there in the sun, moving around.
Not looking
at a computer screen, looking at trees and birds and the water in the river and all those things. You know, we are not supposed to be looking at straight lines. You know, we're supposed to be looking at fractal, complex landscapes.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good point. I love fractals. They're so pretty.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that kind of brings us to the end of this episode. It's been great information as usual, Martin. I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy day to share with myself and all of our listeners. And if anyone wants to leave a comment or have a question, they can leave it on our podcast page at lifeenthusiast.podomatic.com. Also, if you've got a specific question that you want to talk to Martin about, you can call him at 866-543-3388. I'll just give that one more time. That's 866-543-3388. And if you've got any question about nutrition and, Martin, you've been helping many people maximize their health. I don't know how, you know, what the proper way to say it is, but all right. Okay. So any last words, Martin, before we go?
So, folks, I just want you to contemplate a difference between animal protein and vegetable protein. Is there a difference between a good organic grown Canadian hemp protein powder and a piece of, salted bacon? And if you can figure out the difference, please call me. And if you can't figure out the difference, then just order a bottle of the Exela Superfoods. Anyway, I'm done for today. Thank you very much for listening. Call me if you want at 1-866-543-3388. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Life Enthusiast Co-op's podcast. This is Martin Patella, closing for myself and Scott Patton. Reach us at 1-866-543-3388 or website at www.life-enthusiast.com. Thank you for restoring vitality to you and to the planet. Goodbye, everybody.